Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Dave and me.
John.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, what's up, John?
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, man.
Wake up. It's almost noon. Mm-hmm. Listen, I just, while you're kind of wiping your eyes, I would like to say something to the listener here.
Yep.
If you could just be a little quieter while you're stretching. It is so important, listener, to Dave and I, that the supplements that we take are of the highest quality.
Yeah.
Dave doesn't get, he just slept 16 straight hours. I filmed some of it. I couldn't get all of it because my battery died. But that's why... For years, we both have been drinking AG1. It gives us energy, but it also helps us sleep. You know, unlike many supplemental brands, AG1 is constantly researching and searching for how to do things better.
Yeah.
At 52 iterations of their formula and counting,
so
their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and aim to find the best quality ingredients available.
John,
that's just sorry to hit you right in the morning with that.
Welcome,
everybody. Actually, it's noon now.
Yeah, so, but, well, it's morning in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, so many people have asked us if AG1 is the real deal.
Oh my gosh, I get that. If I had a nickel, Dave.
It's on 12 South 2 days ago, and a kid on a bike just, hey, is it real? And that's right. But we've been doing it that long.
Yeah.
We know
that's
it.
That's why we partner with
That's
them.
Why we love them.
Yeah. One word, Dave. Quality.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm.
For AG1, it's not just a buzzword.
Yeah.
It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing.
Yeah.
I say rigorous testing.
Yeah, yeah.
At each step of the process, AG1 goes above. And what, Dave?
AMD, above and beyond.
Above and beyond industry standards.
Listen, John, we can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it is NSF certified for sport. One of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry.
That's right. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality. And I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, biotics.
Yeah.
I'm so excited I can barely pronounce it.
You're starting to salivate. You want it so bad.
And digestive enzymes for gut support.
We've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that we genuinely look forward to drinking every day.
So, if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs. You can go so many places. Well, you can go 5 places.
Yeah.
With those.
Or one place, as you say, 5 times.
5 different times.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll get all that with your first subscription at drinkag1/dadville. Check it out.
John.
Are we live?
We are.
Are we recording this?
I'm trying to make...
Okay.
I woke up this morning.
I know. I watched you.
What?
Go ahead.
I woke up this morning and I thought, it's been a long time.
I know.
Some would say too long.
Too long, yeah.
Since we have answered people's questions.
Yeah.
Since we have had a truckload of questions to answer.
I would like to clarify that a little bit. Yeah.
Truckload is probably like, I would say half a ton. Where were you going?
Well, yeah. Well, when you say truckload, I mean, are we talking Chevy S10, like a 98 S10?
Yep.
Or are we talking like a Mac truck?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But I would... We've lost so many listeners already, but for those who are still with us...
Thank you. We love you.
I would just like to say, Dave said it's been a long time since we've answered questions. I would, of course, argue we've never really answered the question, but it's been a long time since we've acquired some questions.
There we go. Yes.
That then we can read out, and then we'll say stuff afterward. Probably won't be an answer.
Not an answer.
Yeah.
Jokey, digress into oblivion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here we are. We're doing some more Q&A. I really love these.
I don't know why it's been so long since we...
Well, we had our meeting with Jason, our producer, and he was like, hey, it's kind of due for a Q&A. And I got so excited because I was like, I just love... Let's be honest. I just love being asked questions. I love talking.
I do want to say my voice sounds... Does it sound worse or do you like the way that this sounds? I'm a little congested, so I'm a little low in my register.
I like that.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
I kind of like the way that it feels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, just to start our first little side tangent.
Here we go.
When I was a kid,
Like
you would
in
smoke
that,
to get lower voice.
Yeah. Yeah. But they were candy cigarettes.
Ah.
And I see kind of why that didn't work now.
You just wanted to run.
But it was at that time where like my voice was starting to change. Mm-hmm. But it was like when people would call and you'd pick up the phone, you know, that time where like everyone would think that I'm Tammy McLaughlin.
Yeah.
Or Megan McLaughlin. Yeah. My mom or my sister. And you hate that. That's just a dagger to the heart of it.
I do want to clarify those weren't alternative. Those weren't personality of yours.
They were not. It's my mother and my sister. Yeah. But sometimes if I would lay on my stomach, like if I'm watching TV or reading a book or something like that for a long time, it, when I would stand up, my voice would be, for some reason, it would be in like this lower register.
Is that why you always lay down before a dad?
Yeah.
That makes so much more sense. Guys,
that's
John,
why I always lay down and watch an episode of Captain Planet before every episode.
I thought that was just for unity's sake. You were like, guys, we really
well,
do
there
need
are layers to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be for one reason. Anyway, I just wanted to say
it doesn't have to be for one reason.
You're not crazy. My voice does sound a little lower.
Yeah.
Fighting some congestion.
More mature.
And I'm playing a show in LA in 48 hours. But I'm not worried about it.
No, John.
It's going to be fine.
L.A. cures all that.
Yeah.
You hit that smog.
That L.A. air.
And it'll just, it'll give you all kind of other things to worry about.
Prebiotics. Probiotics.
Postbiotics.
Okay. Here we go.
Let's do it.
Wait, am I reading these?
Yeah, you're going to.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm going to read these. Okay.
Yeah.
Jason, our producer, assembled a bunch of these questions in a nice little email. Thank you, Jason. Who actually is under the weather right now, so thank you for fighting through.
Prayers for Jason.
Your check is in the mail. TJ Lopez. We're starting out with a speed round.
Ooh. Okay. We're going backwards. I like this.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
What has gotten easier as your kids have gotten older and what has gotten older?
And what's gotten older? That's with the kids.
What has gotten easier when your kids have gotten older and what has gotten older?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like a trick question.
It does.
Let's assume he meant harder.
There we go.
What's gotten easier, got older? You go first.
I mean, there's so many things that have gotten easier. Like the classic sort of cliche advice is like when the kids are younger, it's physically taxing, and then when they're older, it's emotionally taxing.
I agree with that.
And that is definitely true, for sure. I still think it's easier. I mean, it's true that it is emotionally more draining because they have more stuff that they're dealing with at school and conversations that need to be had. I'll take that all day over physically exhaustion.
Yeah.
Physical exhaustion. When Amy and I want to go out on a little date, we don't have to get a babysitter anymore.
Yeah.
We can just walk down to the corner.
Yep.
You know, we have lots of great restaurants right here.
Yep.
And so that's easier.
Yeah.
The girls can put their own shoes on.
Yeah.
That might actually be the number one thing.
I'd probably vote with you on that as number one.
Literally the
shoes. Those girls finally being able to put their shoes on is a relief to me.
Yeah. There's an SNL commercial skit a couple years ago. It was like a Target commercial for Christmas clothes. Do you remember this?
Mm-mm.
It was so good. It basically was like how the parents are struggling with all the clothes, getting the kids... clothes on.
Yeah.
There's this one bit where the guy, I can't think of his name, he hosts the Is It Cake show. But he's trying to get the kid's foot in the shoe and his wife says something and he's like, well, if you know how to do it, then do it. And I'm like, that is parenting. At that stage, that is what it is like. It's like you're late, you're by the front door.
Yeah.
The fact that they can dress themselves and they can shower and they can brush their own teeth, just all those little things.
You know what? So I'm going to concur with all that. And I think all I would add on the harder part is that they suddenly have like much more definitive opinions.
Yeah.
So like where, you know, like we try this, it has been a week of this. We've had a couple nights where like, let's just, you know, this week has been especially crazy. I was just, you know, gone playing shows and back. And so... Mm-hmm. A grocery run didn't happen. So it's like, let's just go eat somewhere tonight.
Yeah.
Trying to figure that out now. We're used to just pull them and they had to eat there.
Right.
They're just much more like, I don't like that place. And they can enunciate why.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
well,
shit.
And when they were younger, you could say, all the other restaurants are closed.
Yeah. And this is the only one. Yeah.
They believe you.
Sure.
Now they know that's not true.
They know. And so that, you know, those kind of, like, them become, which is beautiful, they're becoming their own little people, but at the same time, you know, they can articulate why they don't like something or don't want to do something.
Right.
And yeah. It's a lot more compelling than just like, I don't want to go. And you're like, we're going. Mm-hmm. And so it does make, you know, and I do think the emotional stuff is a muscle I have not had that I'm trying to work out into sort of like a healthy, how do you navigate those conversations? And
yeah,
you know, just like,
and they always come at, they don't come at the time where you have the energy for yeah. it and you've got the time for it. Yeah. They come at inconvenient times.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. I love this next question. What's the best purchase you've made in the last year? That's a great question.
Can you think of yours?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind, this kind of doesn't count because it wasn't, I didn't purchase it. It was a gift given to me by my brother.
Okay.
This sounds like it. This is like maybe the ultimate dumb dad gift.
Okay.
It's this thing called like the battery caddy or battery daddy or something like that. Battery buddy. Okay. It looks like a little briefcase.
Okay.
And it has you, it's just full of batteries. All different kinds of batteries.
Wow.
Do you have one of these?
No.
Let me tell you. When he gave it to me and my dad, and he was like, you're going to think this is a bad gift. This is a great gift. He's like, now when, used to be when something was run out of batteries or whatever, it would be so annoying because you're like, I don't know where the batteries are. Do we have any AA's or do, you know, whatever. He's like, now when something runs out of batteries, I'm like, I kind of get excited and I go get my little battery caddy. And it's totally true.
Yeah.
Like on all of our doors, we have like a punch code thing, a little electronic thing. And they all take batteries. And every time they start running out of batteries, they do this annoying thing where like you put the code in and it makes you wait like 3 extra seconds because it's like, hey, we're about to run out of batteries, so replace our batteries.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, I'll just go grab my battery caddy. So
I think the two things I think of, one of these is a weird one, but I'll qualify. One, I really like, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I bought like one of basically every color of the Lululemon has these warm up like hoodies. Like you know. Which I've told you this even on the podcast, like you've converted me into
You're a hoodie guy now.
I'm a hoodie guy now.
Yeah.
I love them so much.
Are they like thick?
No, they're like that kind of buttery, wonderful.
So like a little greasy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you just fry them for like half a second on each arm,
they get crispy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can just lick them all day. I really like those. And another thing, now this is a weird thing, but it was a purchase. There's a guy, I got to shout out my homie here, Esteban Cervantes. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say that with an American accent, by the way. Esteban.
I think it's disrespectful.
I don't know. I mean,
What even is an American accent?
Our Spanish-speaking friends can help me there. Yeah. But anyway, Esteban here, I'm just going to go with American accent because it feels disrespectful somehow to try to do it with an accent.
Either way.
Though I think I kind of kill the accent.
Esteban. Yeah.
Esteban. He is so my buddy Josh Kerr, I was writing with him at his studio, which by the way, I should say this. I did a remix of Sunshine, my song from the last album.
It's awesome.
It's a summer mix. Josh worked on it with me.
It was kind of
the mastermind.
I love the
remix. But we were over doing, it comes out Memorial Day weekend, somewhere. And, but I was talking to Josh about all the guitars, and he was like, dude, I just had this guy come over and set up all the guitars. He comes to your studio and does them there. And I'm telling you.
For those who don't know, setting up a guitar is like somebody comes in.
I'm glad you said that.
Tunes it and checks like the bridge and all that kind of stuff.
I love
the action.
You immediately ran out of road on that one.
Hey, I had two terms.
You were good. That
bridge,
was good. Yeah,
action.
Action.
Neck. They crank something?
Yeah,
I don't know.
The cranks. Usually you take your guitars to these guys wherever they are set up in your city, and you know you leave them with them for like a week, sometimes 2 weeks, and then they go in and they clean the guitar. They make sure the electronics are working. They like the bridge, if it needs to be shaved, or a new one put in so the strings sit, and then they go into like the neck of the guitar and make sure that nothing is, you know, the frets aren't buzzing. It's all that stuff. It's like a pretty, it's not like a long doesn't take a long time to do, but it's pretty intense, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of details.
Yeah.
And then they put new strings on and make sure all the string height across the thing is right. You know, it's all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just kind of, especially when you have, you know, I actually don't, my friends have a lot more guitars than I do, but, you know, when you have 7 or 8 guitars, all in, basses, electrics,
there are 11 guitars I just counted.
Is there really 11?
Yep.
Anyway, you know, like, imagine if I was like, I need to get all those set up.
Yep.
You got to schlep them in your car. It's,
right.
it's a pain. And you got to find the cases. Mm-hmm. God, I sound so unbelievably champagne problems
no,
right
it's
now.
Rough.
But anyway, it's annoying. It's just annoying. It's annoying.
It's rough.
But he came here, set up in my studio that day, and in like 4 hours was like, all right, man, we're good. They're mm-hmm. all set up. I paid him. It was like, I just love that feeling when you find something like that where you're like, I would pay for this every day of the week.
Yeah.
Because it's such a wonderful combination of things. Like,
yeah.
I don't have to take my guitars anywhere. He's here. He can grab me and go, hey, is this feeling right? And I go, oh, yeah, that's a little higher, lower action, different strings, whatever. It was awesome. It was like, I've thought about that so many times, how convenient that was.
That's great.
It was a great use of money.
And that's what us piano owners have been doing the whole time. We don't take our piano someplace.
And just you know, just a little backstory on Esteban. He's a guitar tech for one of Thomas Schrett's guitar players. So you may see him on the road, everybody.
Yeah.
If you see a guy run out and, you know, fix a guitar for one of Thomas's
Esteban.
That's our boy, EC.
Best dad swag you own or wish you owned.
What's dad swag?
It's exactly. Like, you know what? I think if this counts as dad swag, I don't know if this counts.
Okay.
The luggage rack thing that we got.
No, that's, I'm into that.
That's one of the best purchases. If we had purchased that this year, that would have been my answer.
That'd have been
for the earlier question.
Okay.
It's like the you know the luggage boat thing that goes on top of cars.
Yeah.
We got one of those a couple years ago, and one of the best purchases I've ever made.
I don't know what mine is. I mean, I think it might. I think like, yeah, I don't have an answer for that. Let's just let's let yours play.
If you think of anything,
try to think of anything that's like dad-ish that I bought, and I can't.
I mean, by definition, everything we buy is dad-ish.
Touche.
You know?
Touche.
Okay. Jennifer, a.k.a. Jennicita. How do you guys find your guests? And, well, we don't keep track of them after they're gone. We let them go.
Yeah.
And then, you know. And when you decide on someone, who contacts them? And what do you say? Like, I always wonder if they're like, hang on a second.
You're doing great.
I'm having a small stroke. If they know who you are and if you get super excited or if they're like, who are these guys and why do they want my time? Okay, so yeah, that's an easy answer. I mean, it's either a combination of like Dave is friends with Tony Hale and sends him a text and is like, hey, do you want to be on the podcast? I mean, most of our guests are either Dave, I mean, you are friends with most of these people. I'm friends with some of them, but you're...
Or at least have a friend that's a friend with them.
Yeah.
You know, there's some contact there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then sometimes our network, that sounds fun.
I thought you were about to say net worth. I was like, where is this going?
I will leverage my net worth to get some of our guests. I don't like to do that.
We'll send that in the email to them. Just so you know what you're dealing with.
I'll just send a couple bank statements.
Yeah. This is where we are financially. So if you want to know if we're worth having on, you can make that decision very easily.
Our network might have somebody for us, or our producer, Jason, might have somebody that, like, hey.
And another thing that was really helpful is that we polled –
Oh,
you
that's
guys,
right.
Like we asked the listeners, we're like, hey, and I'm still working. I mean, we still book off that list.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a couple of our guests, I mean, I would say half our guests in the last probably 6 months have been from that list.
Yeah.
Because we asked, I mean, this was like a couple years ago and it was so long.
Yeah.
I remember writing all of them down. I just kind of slowly over time would check out the people I didn't know. I'd check them out and, you know, probably one every three people, I'd be like, oh, this is, I don't know who this is. This is awesome. And then, you know, we'd have them on. So I think
anytime you guys have an idea for a guest, just leave it on a comment.
And then second part, do they know who we are? How does that work? I would say in the music world, most of them at least have some clue about us.
Yeah.
If you know, you get the more successful those people get, it's a little tricky. But like, you know, We you and I just know a lot of people. So music is usually a little easier because there's some sense of connection or whatever. I would say a healthy amount of sort of like the book author world doesn't know who we are because I don't know why they would.
Yeah.
And then
which I like those.
Those are great.
I like it when they don't know who we are.
And then, you know, I feel like a lot of people in sort of the Christian space tend to, so it's not quite as you know, sort of like, who are you and why? Although we've had, you know, we've had a couple, I won't say who, that do make me laugh, where they, like, one of the first questions they either asked before we started, or even y'all may remember as listeners who they were, but those always crack me up. Like, tell me why y'all wanted me to do this?
Yeah.
You know, it's always like, oh, that's sort of sweet. Or is it bad?
Who knows?
Hello, Dave. Wow. Okay, yours was better than mine. Johnny.
Thanks.
Are you loving this warmer weather? Summer is just around the corner.
Dave, I am so glad that you brought that up because the weather has been so great. I'm playing tennis, right? I'm sitting outside on the porch in my tennis shoes, going for walks in different shoes. I don't walk in tennis shoes. Yeah, I mean, it's so nice. And honestly, I don't really want to be spending too much time in the kitchen making meals because there's so many other good things
John, 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 John. That's where Factor comes in. You can fuel up with Factor's no prep, no mess meals, so you can spend more time outside.
Okay, it sounds good, but Dave, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Can I meet my wellness goals in time for summer with Factor?
I hope you've got goals and then more goals, John, because we'd call you Cristiano Ronaldo. Soccer joke.
Heyo.
And guess what? And then some, John. It's going to be just fine. Factor has chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. And Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Dave, that sounds so awesome. You've talked me into it. I'm ready.
Wow, that was easy.
I'm ready to kickstart my routine with 35 different meals.
Gracious.
And more than 60 add-ons to choose from, Dave. Did you know that? I'm educating you now. And these are restaurant-quality meals like filet mignon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
Blackened salmon.
Enjoy effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced.
Head to factormeals.com/dadville50 and use the code dadville50 to get 50% off. That's 50, 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code DADVILLE50 at factormeals.com/DADVILLE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. John, tag, you're supposed to run after me after I touch you. You can't, that's not how tag works the way you're playing.
It's a regional thing. I'm playing Midwestern rules.
Oh, I should have known that. Okay,
yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hey, speaking of, Dave, you know, with Memorial Day coming up,
I'm guessing you're
probably getting ready for plenty of fun days in the sun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I right?
First, I have to learn these rules for tag. But, yes, everyone knows this, John. Everyone knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby.
Oh, yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company, and they've got just what you need for Memorial Day weekend, MDW, for those of us who celebrate all year, and all the way through summertime.
They do. And with over 20 different frame styles, there's something for the whole family, including tons for kids.
So, whether you're looking to rock a pair of red, white, and blue shades for the big weekend, or just to restock your collection before summer gets here, Knockaround has you covered.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you know that all their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyeballs?
Oh, man. And I've put copper tone just right on the old ojos, and
it
burns.
It's
is not burning
pretty.
Still to this day.
Yeah, well, you keep putting it on.
Well, it's a habit. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
You know, Dave, where I come from, Memorial Day weekend means it's race day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
oh,
there's no more important place to have some shades than outside at the track.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard me say that once, you've heard me say that a million
times. It's on your front yard.
I think I might actually just buy a pair of knockarounds in that color.
Yeah.
Like in the color of each car, actually.
Yeah.
And it's switching back and forth based on who's leading the race.
Love that. That's one of the best ideas you've ever had.
So listen, Dadville fans,
Take that idea and run with it. Also, don't be the one squinting through family beach days or trips to the park. Go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com.
I just said that.
All right, this is from Delaney. This is a great question. I recently saw a video going viral on social media where music producer Rick Rubin says, quote, the audience comes last, end quote, in regards to music creation. From what I gather, the crux of his argument is that musicians should create music for themselves, and then in doing so, their art will be so personal and vulnerable that it will ultimately resonate with other people. But that the main goal of the creation should always be to create a body of work that they are proud of. Jacob Collier, an emerging musician who has collaborated with Coldplay, John Legend, Tori Kelly, etc., etc. We know Jacob, he's a genius. That was me speaking just then. Back to the question. Recently disagreed with the premise of this quote in a recent interview, saying that inherently creative people can make music with a specific audience in mind, and that there doesn't always have to be a personal benefit from it. As two of my all-time favorite musicians, I'd love your perspective on this. I think that's a great question.
Yeah, I feel like there's like 8 million thoughts I have. I'm trying to figure out which one is the best to answer that question.
So some of my thoughts that come to mind immediately is, I will say, I tend to side with Rick Rubin. In general, if I had to pick a one way, like if this had to be a binary thing where you always have to be going in one of these directions, I would go the Rick Rubin route. But that's not to say that you can't. I mean, I think Randy Newman has some funny quote where Randy Newman has written so many soundtracks and songs for movies and stuff like that. Probably his most household namey kind of thing is all the Toy Story stuff. But Randy Newman is, of course, a legendary artist.
You got a friend
artist.
In me and all that stuff.
Yeah. And he said one time, I love writing a song for a specific project. And it was something like if some studio came to me and was like, we have a movie, it's about this, hermit, a hoarder albino living in the hills of Arkansas or whatever, he'd be like, I'm excited to write that song.
Yeah. It's the thing.
Which that in and of itself is a creative endeavor. The parameters of it, like the limitations of it, can be really freeing in a weird way.
Yeah.
I feel like you are a songwriter who does this. You put these parameters on yourself. They're self-imposed. Like this last record that you did.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. You self-imposed this parameter on yourself that you're going to go in this one specific stylistic direction of the McCartney, Beatles, that world. That's the lane you're going to go in.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you had great ideas, songwriter ideas, or production style sonic ideas that were probably great that didn't fall in that lane. And so you cut them out because you're staying true to a specific, which as I'm saying that, I'm like, well, that's not necessarily that you're curating something for a specific audience. It's more like you're curating a specific style. Anyway, these are just thoughts off the top of my head. I always, as a songwriter, deal with this. Like I have a song that I just played you the other day where I've got this new song. I really, really love it. And I have two choruses. One I feel like is less commercial. The other one I feel like is more commercial. I like them both.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to... That's a real tangible example of me dealing with this exact element where I'm like, which one do I go with? Because I like them both, but I feel like the one will be a little more accessible to the listener.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to go?
There's the whole thing is really interesting to me in the light of like, okay, so the danger of what Rick is saying, I think Rick is a genius. I love his thoughts. And so anytime he has takes like this, I always lean in because I think he is a really great thinker, and especially when it comes to creativity and music and all those things. I think maybe the easiest way I can answer is like the danger of the truth of Rick Rubin's idea that, like, you know, you don't ever want to create with a specific audience in mind. You want to create to satiate you. The truth of that is if you like what you've done, that's the best you can do.
Yeah.
I have zero control over what people who listen to my music think about music. I can just tell you, my goal is to be able to look at you in the eye as a listener and go, I promise you this matters to me.
Yeah.
That's the best I got.
Mm-hmm.
The worst I can be is, I don't really love this, but I think you will.
Yeah.
That's tricky. So to Rick's point, the truth of it is, I agree. Like you said,
yeah,
you want to create something that you really love. That's the apex of artistry to me.
Yeah.
The trick of that is it can get very self-serving. It can get very navel-gazy. I can get lost in my world with no thought for people. And so I can create some 7-minute jazz escapade that changes keys 900 times. Nobody knows what's going on, but I'm so geeked because it did all these cool little music-y things.
Yeah.
Wildly irrelevant in the world, because everybody's like, other than the five people who are like, you know, that's really cool, everybody else is like, what is this?
Right.
So the danger of what Rick is saying is you can create things that are really self-serving but unusable.
But what would Rick Rubin would say, what's dangerous about that?
You wouldn't have a career. I mean, if it's a hobby, that's great. But if you're trying to make a living, it has to be in commerce. You can't live off people admiring something but never paying for it.
But don't you think Wick Rubin?
He wouldn't. Wick would agree.
Wick's on Jacob's side. He actually has been working with him, Ox Perk, for years. No, don't you think Rick would say...
Ox Perk. And back on those timbales, give it up for Wick Rubin. Face guy, I'm having a blast back here.
The egg solo.
He's working it. Wick is back there.
Don't you think he would say you can't? The commerce side of it has no place in this
room. Here's my biggest pushback with that: is just the Beatles. Arguably the greatest, most profitable music ever made. Paul and John would tell you. So many interviews you read with them, they always say we never wanted to create anything that people wouldn't like. That was mm-hmm. always a part of their... So from Strawberry Fields to I Want to Hold Your Hand, they were always conscious of this needs to be marketable. We got to sell this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be the biggest band in the world, so we can't just get locked in our thing and sort of go, this is what I came up with. And it's like, this is cool, but what is this? You know what I mean?
And
George Martin helped a lot with that, with, you know, they could bring in weird stuff. And if you listen to a lot of the demos from those records they put out over the last 10 years where it's like, oh, the first demo of Strawberry Fields, you realize George Martin's genius and going like, okay, that is hodgepodge, but there's something there.
Yeah.
And you know, so he would help that. So I think the pushback for what, and I think a lot of people would say, potentially like Jacob is saying, is like, it's not the end of the world to think of it in a quality way. Like, is this got the quality to reach more people? Has it got the quality that will make it through into the zeitgeist or to the commercial space or even just my 500 fans or whatever you have as a songwriter out there?
Right.
I just think when you do either two, it's anything, right? It's like you do either one too much, you get in trouble. Because if you're self-serving, we all know people who are really gifted that have legion fans, but the music is just a little too far for most people. But they have fans. But, you know, but I think a lot of people are like, man, if somebody would just sit with them and be like, if you would pull it 5 degrees this way, and they may be like, we don't want it. Or they may be like, God, that's helpful. Thank you. And then, you know, bands that, you know, crank out the stuff that you're like, this is unintelligible from anything else, but it's wildly listenable. Mm-hmm. And so I think to me, I'll watch where I go with this. The way I would sum up my feeling on this stuff is, what I want from every artist is really, it's numerous things, but the main thing is, I just want you to be the most you can be. That is my charge to every artist. Like, when you give me music, I just want it to be you. Like, just do the music only John McLaughlin can do. Do the music only Dave Barnes can do. Matt Wirtz, like, John Mayer, Coldplay. Like, that's, I start to get a little sad when I feel like bands, artists start looking too much to what Rick would argue with, you know, like you're losing yourself because you're so concerned on, is this palatable? Is this digestible? That it's not even you anymore. It's just your version of whatever's on the radio at that moment. It's not, you know,
right.
These artists we all grew up on that we love, from the Paul Simons, Stevie Wonders, whoever, that really were like, I'm going to create this and it's just going to be so good. It'll be a hit.
Yeah.
But it is a Paul Simon song.
Yeah.
It's a Stevie Wonder song. It's a Paul McCartney song. It's a Beatles song. So that's, I think that's probably how I think about it more globally, is like, I agree with Rick, I agree with Jacob, but in the middle of that to me is, whatever you do, just like put as much of you into it as you can.
Yeah.
Because that's really what I want. I want to hear like, man, John McLaughlin does what John McLaughlin does, and that's why he's great. And, you know, John Mayer does what Mayer does, and that's why he's great. And, you know, so to me, I'm always like, that's a little bit more of my litmus tape, you know, is like, and I'm okay if, you know, Wurtz came ever played a song and it's crazy hooky, but I'm like, dude, that's also a Matt Wurtz song.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And he could even be like, I was trying to write a single. I'm like, well, you did it, my man. Like,
well, those are the stars aligning a little
bit. Yeah.
I mean, the best case scenario is if you can write some song that is like totally you and unique to you and checks the artistic box completely,
and then has,
and just so happens to be marketable.
Because I think, and last thought, I think the thing that you can short if you stick too much to Rick's idea is that you may miss out on letting yourself go, what if I thought a little more commercially? What if I didn't just want to do all my weird stuff? And let's play a fun game where, like, what does it sound like if I go, I wonder what it's like if I try to write a chorus people can sing right after I write it. Now, I haven't shorted myself at all. I haven't suddenly given me a parameter that makes me less me. I've just given myself a new parameter.
Right.
And so I think that's where sometimes I can get tricky. It's like, to your point, I think it's wonderful to have parameters. I think it's the Beatles, everybody does that. Whether they'll tell you that or not, I promise you they do it. There's no way for someone who has listened to music to then sit down and create music and not be affected by what they've listened to.
Right.
And even at the most subconscious level. So you kind of can't ever do that. But I think to your point about crowd, I'm like, parameters can be wonderful. Parameters have created the greatest music in the world because somebody went, man, I love that. I want to do something like that. Or like,
yeah, it inspired,
you know,
something.
But I don't know that in those moments they were going, I want these, all those people to like it. Sometimes they have, but I think a lot of times it's more about like, I want to be informed to do this thing. So I'm limiting myself, but in a way that can be really wonderful.
Yeah.
You know?
And where you fall on that line is the artist themselves has to decide. That can't be determined from the outside in.
John, quick question for you.
Yep.
Have I ever lied to you? Don't answer that.
Yeah, don't want to answer that.
I was going to say. But I'm going to tell you the truth right now, okay?
Okay.
I need a break.
Okay.
And I feel like it's time to get some coffee.
I was actually going to suggest it.
Okay.
Today's episode and my morning cup of Joe, that's street term for coffee, is brought to you by, let's sing it together. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Methodical coffee.
That was exactly how we ran it, but it may be better. Methodical Coffee has craft coffee and tea for people of all kinds. Roasted, blended, brewed, served, and perfected by verified coffee and tea nerds like our boy, our in-house tea nerd, Johnny Mac.
You know it, Dave. And now Methodical has resolved the headache of having too little or too much coffee from your traditional time-based coffee subscription. With Methodical, you can subscribe by usage. Mm-hmm. Receive a free smart scale that tracks your coffee consumption and triggers your next order right at the perfect time. We're living in the future, Dave.
My goodness.
So you can always have the right amount of coffee on hand, worry-free.
Best part is you can receive 20% off your first bag and then 10% of all subsequent bags. That means the bag's coming after with no code needed when you try the free smart scale.
Dave, you're also smart.
Don't do that.
Dave, we also have our very own Dadville blend
that
we need to mention. Yes. It's the fuel that gets me going every morning at 2 a.m. I'm up, quiet time, up, quiet time.
That's not,
filled with hints of chocolate, graham, and brown sugar.
Methodical is on a mission to connect people to the beauty of life through coffee experiences for people like you. Methodical's been roasting and hosting, I mean a classic case of roast and host, for over 9 years, and they offer a wide selection of coffees and teas from dark and roasty to bright and funky, just like me.
Dave Barnes, bright and funky. On their site, you'll also find brew guides that'll teach you how to turn your coffee brewing chore, it's not a chore,
it's not,
or whatever,
it's a
into a beloved ritual. Also, get 10% off your first
order of coffee or tea with the discount code DADVILLE.
I'm just going to remind him, John, that's 10% off your first order with the discount code DADVILLE. Craft a cup you'll love with Methodical Coffee.
Dave.
John, we all love summer, and our kids especially love summer, but we lose that consistent schedule of when kids are in school, and that can create some summer childcare problems.
You know what? Thankfully, though, Dave, there's a solution.
What?
Windy. That's W-Y-N-D-Y. Listen, it's an app that connects families to college student nannies literally in minutes. These nannies are background checked, interviewed, and honestly, just awesome, Dave.
That's right, John. And Windy has been around for 7 years and has been used by over 20,000 families. There are hundreds of qualified college student nannies on Windy near you, working full or part-time.
All you have to do is go to windy.com/dadville to start searching for a nanny. And as a special offer, they're going to knock off $50 off your search if you go through that link. Windy provides top-notch service, but at a fraction of the cost of traditional nanny agencies and no ongoing fees.
Okay, so here's how it works. Go to windy.com/dadville to start your search. A Windy concierge will find great matches for your job and set up interviews for you. You can choose the one you like.
Get started now, because there are a lot of parents out there looking for nannies for the summer.
That's right.
Go to wyndy.com/dadville.
All right. Kimberly says, love the pod and love your music. Dave, My Love Will Follow You was my wedding song in 2020. So thanks for that. Number one, whose musical career would you most like to emulate and why? Mine is Ben Folds.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Ben Folds is objectively a musical genius. He's a killer, killer pianist. He can also, he's killer at all the instruments. But he has created great music, both with his band and solo.
And the symphonies and stuff he does.
Exactly, yeah. He had a phase where he did a bunch of a cappella stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of like highlighted the a cappella choral world for a while. And I'm sure still does. And then he started working with Y Music and then a bunch of symphonies all over the world.
Yeah.
And so he sort of is always highlighting the orchestral world and his, you know, I love that. Plus, I also feel like he's not, he can still live his life. He can go out in the world and like go get a coffee and not be hounded.
Yeah.
To me, he's got the perfect
not in this
career.
Neighborhood, which he used to live in. probably other places.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't. This one's tricky for me because I just don't want to be famous like that.
Yeah.
Like I just so any artist that I think of, I'm always like, I don't want that life, man. I want to be able to go to Kroger and.
But that's part of the reason why I am drawn to Ben Folds'
for sure.
Career.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think for me, and you know, he's getting more famous, but it's funny we said Jacob Collier. The thing I love about Jacob is he loves music.
Yeah.
He's sort of a music educator. Like he likes getting out and talking about what's happening. Mm-hmm. I am like that. He collaborates, which I think is so fun, and I really envy. Like it'd be fun to be able to do that more. I think he and he just makes really interesting, cool music that he wants to make.
Yeah.
And it happens to be really great. And at times really commercial. And I just love that. I'm like, man, what a cool, you know, he has the respect of a lot of the industry, which is really cool. And especially musicians. And so,
I mean, the guy is a mutant.
Oh, he's, yeah. I mean, if y'all don't know who he's like probably, you know, this is a hot take, but I mean, one of 1,000 people in the history of human civilization that is as gifted as he is musically.
Oh yeah.
If not, maybe 100.
Easily.
I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
And so I just love his heart. I love that he's such a music fan. I love that he promotes people and music in general. He wants to tell people about how great music is and, you know, he collaborates. I love what he does. It's really fun.
Question part two of Kimberly's question. When will you two record and release something together?
Gosh, just the 100th time that's been asked. I feel like we can't leave the studio without My kid asked me that.
We don't know.
Yeah, but who knows?
One of these days.
Yeah.
Kimberly.
Yep.
Carson says, I'm going to get deep here, y'all.
Oh.
Okay.
Respect.
But have you ever struggled with feeling like God is pleased with you doing music? I grew up in a conservative Baptist church that elevated the, quote, call to preach high above all else. I, quote, rebelled at 18 and signed a management contract to do country music and did it for a couple years. Then I, quote, repented and went to college to study ministry. And now I'm back to doing music full time. But occasionally I struggle.
Living in sin. Yeah, living in sin.
Back in sin. But occasionally I struggle with finding purpose in it. Recently, I was playing for a concert of about 35 to 40 people, mostly drug rehab patients, and I finally accepted that God was pleased with me in that moment, even though I wasn't playing only Christian music. It was monumental for me, and now I'm energized to continue on in music for the love of it and for the glory of God. I'd love to hear y'all talk about this or give any insight into this. I'll say that I personally have always felt, I grew up in the church, and when I started doing music, it's definitely would have been a natural path for me to go down the Christian music path. I just never personally felt, I was going to say called to do that. I don't want to say called. I just didn't want to do that.
Yeah, pulled that way.
I just didn't feel pulled that way. I just felt like I wanted to write music, and I wanted the songs that I wrote to be about whatever I wanted them to be about. And I only felt a responsibility to be honest, to like live a good life and write songs about that life that I was living.
Yeah.
You know? So I personally have not struggled with that specifically, you know.
Yeah, same as you. I mean, I thought early on, like, oh, this is what you do, you know. If you're like a Christian dude that plays guitar, then you like go make Christian music, and just could not have failed at that more. I mean, those songs were so bad, and then I would write other songs that felt much more natural and resonated.
Yeah,
and really resonated. I think that was a big part. Is I would go play those, and it was like, man, people really like these. And they felt much more natural, and I felt like I could do them for forever, whereas any of that sort of like more Christian-leaning stuff was just so fabricated that was just bad. It was so bad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you and I have a copious amount of friends who do that really naturally, amazingly well.
Totally.
And I think about Chris Tomlin, Brandon Heath, a bunch of our friends are really good at that.
I just ran into Mike Donahue the other day.
There you go. Mike's another one.
He's a great example of like, I think I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing and what I should be doing. I think Mike is doing exactly what he should be doing.
That's right.
You know,
and we need those things. I mean, why in the world would the Lord not want people who believe what we believe out in the world doing beautiful things that point to him?
Yeah.
I don't understand that logic,
yeah.
But I get it. I struggle with that too early on. So I think, you know, and I think too, that there's something really beautiful about when you find things that you really feel equipped to do when, you know, that's a wonderful moment in your life is when you go, I feel like I am on fire with joy right now.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes it just takes a while to find that thing
and
to go, oh, this is what I really feel equipped to do. And it brings me so much life and joy when I do it. You know?
Yeah. And like the Rick Rubin, Jacob Collier question earlier, that can only be determined from the inside
that's
out.
Right.
You
that's
know?
Right. And it could be really weird, wonderfully unique things. It can be someone feels that way getting up and playing in front of 100 people on guitar. It can be somebody's like, dude, I play, and we know people, I just play prisons. I go into prisons and when I leave, I feel like I'm floating.
Yeah.
I feel the joy of the Lord.
Yeah.
Who is to qualify that? Like how in the world would I come in and be like, no, you don't play for that. Go to churches. I'm like, nah, man. Like,
yeah.
So to be free, I think everybody has the right to be free to find those things and really go, oh, this is quirky, but man, I feel so good when I do this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, that's not to say that I don't struggle with that general idea of like, is God cool with what I'm doing?
How are we doing that? We're dragging.
And I've said it so many times on here. I mean, having kids was a monumental shift in that thinking.
Yeah.
And it's still hard for me because my knee jerk, my there's something, I don't know if it's innate or if it's, you know, nature or nurture or whatever, but it's like there's that knee jerk reaction to think I'm not doing what I should be doing or yeah. whatever, you know yeah. what I mean? But if I think of me the way that I think of my girls, I mean, again, yeah. I've said it so many times, but it's like, it's already done. They've already won.
Yeah.
They can't do anything. Yeah. I mean, you know, they can make bad decisions, of course, but which I remind them of daily. But. All right. Ryland. That's a cool name.
It is.
Ryland.
I like that.
This is another speed round.
Ooh.
Okay. Quickly. If you could podcast like anyone, who would it be? Speed round, Dave.
Oh yeah, I hear smart. Smartless to me would be funny. Just guess that nobody knows. I love their setup. I think like
their setup.
It's a
is
fun
genius.
Setup. It's a really fun
you know
setup.
They had Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Oh, on, that's I'm gonna listen.
Like last
to that.
Week, it was great.
That. By the way, if you're asking for dream guests, you just heard two of ours.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, they're two totally different styles. Terry Gross. Mm-hmm. I think is amazing. Her questions, she asks, her style is more like, I'm going to ask you the
yeah.
eight questions that yeah. I prepared, and this will be question, then you answer, and then I ask my next
yeah.
question.
Yeah, yeah.
It's less of a like yeah. back and forth yeah. conversation. I think she is really great. And Dax Shepard, I think, is his ability to have a conversation with anyone like Machine Gun Kelly or you know, a nuclear physicist or something like that. He has his ability to have conversation.
Yeah,
is,
yeah. Yeah.
It's really amazing. Okay, second question. If you could have dinner with three Beatles, which would you let it be? Well done. Well done. Who are you gonna cut out?
I don't probably Ringo only because he wasn't primarily a songwriter. That's the only reason, though. That's the only reason.
Here's what I thought when I read that. Obviously, Ringo is the one that maybe you, for that reason, you would cut out. But Ringo, thanks to Will Anderson, our buddy Will Anderson, mm-hmm. he's posted a couple videos
yeah.
that kind of highlight yeah, some yeah, of yeah. Ringo's genius.
Oh, it's incredible.
That I'm like, nah, I kind of want to talk to Ringo about some of these.
Again.
I mean, you'd want to talk to all of them, obviously.
Yeah, but I think if I had to make that call, just the songwriter may be like, I just have too many questions.
And here's the thing, though. If Paul and John are there, are they going to start fighting?
Mm.
So.
That's fair.
Might have to pick one.
Yeah.
Hannah says, first off, I just want to say how much I enjoy the Dadville podcast. It's the highlight of my Tuesday. Not only do I glean good wisdom and knowledge in growing to understand my own dad better, but I love the laughs and simple honesty in the life of dads.
That's sweet.
Thank you. My husband and I are expecting our first in July.
Congrats.
And I am looking forward to seeing my husband become a dad to our little girl and also grow in parenthood together. So what is a dream dad planned fun day or vacation, past, present, or future, that you want to do with your kids? I took both of my girls when they were seven to Chicago for a couple of days, just the two of us. And
those two,
I got that idea from our friend Matt Lehman,
mm-hmm.
who
had taken them.
He took them, which was so generous of him, you know. No, he took, I think his son Theo. They went to D.C. and they were over at the house. This was, you know, 3-4 years ago. They had gone to D.C., just the two of them. And I was like, what a great idea to just go on a couple days, just one of your kids.
Yeah.
So Luca and I did it and had a blast. And then Livia and I did it just last summer. And it was so fun.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get mad, but I mean, the obvious Disney World, any of the theme parks are just really fun. I mean, they make billions of dollars because they are really good at what they do.
Yeah.
And the experience is great. I think one of my favorite things that would have been a dream had we not been able to do it but it was realized, thankfully, is going to an Arsenal game with the fam in London was really, really, really fun. That was a huge bucket list for me.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll do it again. But that was a real one of the, you know, kind of back to that first question, I think one of the joys as my kids grow up is like you really do start to share these interests genuinely. Mm-hmm. Not sort of a sure, they're all kind of handed down, but at the same time, when they really own those things, it's fun to really have these things that you both care about.
Yeah.
And you can share, and that's one of ours. And yeah. So that was so much fun.
You know, I talked to Ben the other day about the documentary,
the Man City.
Man thing. City documentary. And yeah, I love, because he knows what he's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
He probably knows more than I do at this point, which is pretty substantial. Yeah. Like, but I'll
just in general.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he knew that at five, but just as far as soccer stuff.
All right. This is a dual question, like Sarah and Becca wrote in.
Okay.
Oh, I see. Jason said they both basically asked the same question, so he's combining them.
Okay.
Burning question
that
I/we wondered for so long, and now I'm finally going to ask. What's the story of how John got the gig for singing So Close in Disney's Enchanted?
There it is.
We need deets. Also, did John write that song? One of my all-time faves. Mm. So I'll let you answer this one.
Yeah. John had been shooting home videos of himself singing all sorts of Disney songs. And you would do the voice of all the characters. Uh-huh. And you would do scenes. I mean, these were out. I remember the one you sent me. It was an hour and 15 minutes of The Little Mermaid.
That was just the trailer.
Yeah. And that was for Little Mermaid 2. Uh-huh. Still Swimming is what you'd called it. And I, you know, it felt far-fetched, but I guess it fell into the right hands. And I could keep talking, but it's just going to get less funny. please finish that thought.
Still Swimming. Still Swimming after all these years. I teamed up with Paul Simon. it was a total just, you know, right place at the right time. Disney was working on this movie, obviously, and Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz did all the music. Mm. So if you don't know who Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz are, they are legends.
Geniuses.
Legends.
Yep.
Especially in that Disney world.
Yeah.
And they reached out to Island Def Jam, who was my label at the time, and because they had this song So Close, and they were looking for someone to sing it. And so, I mean, it's really just as simple as that. Like, they reached out to the label, and the label was like, we'll ask them, and they were like, would you like to sing this song for this Disney? And I didn't even hear the rest of the sentence. I was just like, I mean, where do I go?
Done. Yeah.
And I recorded the song and then flew back home, recorded the song in Long Island, actually, randomly. Flew back home, and then I got a call like a week later, and they were like, hey, do you want to like fly back up? They're shooting in Brooklyn, and you want to just be in the scene where and you could just be like the ballroom singer. And again, I hung up the phone before they even finished. I just started walking to Brooklyn, which I knew was north-ish. And
the same for George Washington back in the day.
Yeah.
He would just get on his horse and sort of, I feel like New York is this way from D.C.
So that's basically it. I mean, it was a...
And the shoot, so answer a couple more quick questions. The shoot itself took how long? Like, how long were you on set?
For a week.
A week?
A week. For that one scene.
Dude, I didn't
scene.
Know it was a week.
Yeah, Amy and I flew up to New York. We stayed in New York, and we were shooting in this warehouse in Brooklyn. So if you watch the movie, the ballroom and the apartment were both built just in this huge warehouse in Brooklyn. And, I mean, it's crazy when you know, I mean, this is a dumb thing to say because, of course, we know it, like movies and television, it's not real. But you look at those scenes in that apartment, and you're like, that's not real sunlight.
Yeah.
Went through those windows.
Crazy.
You know?
Crazy.
They're in a dark
warehouse
in Brooklyn. Yeah. And we shot that scene for a week. And there were like, you know, 200 people in the scene. I mean, so much coordination. And it was a blast. Every morning, a van would come to our hotel and like pick Amy and I up. And then we would go and we would pick up Patrick Dempsey at his apartment a couple blocks away, And then we'd pick up James Marsden at his place, and then
did
Amy
people,
and Adina.
Okay, so here's the humor, and I know everybody feels this way too. Did people confuse you and James Marsden?
No.
You two look
that was
so
not a thing then.
Freaking similar to me.
I cannot hear that enough. I love that. That is a huge compliment to me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Never put us side by side, because I want us to be seen separately, and then it'd be thought that I look like him. If you put us side by side, then that... It's
I don't know,
work.
Man. It's pretty...
Yeah.
I forget he was in that. I remember Patrick Dempsey, of course, but I forget that he was in it, too.
They were all great. And Tay Diggs was in... Or not... He wasn't in it, but he and Adina were together at the time. And so he was around. And the nicest guy in the world.
Wow.
The nicest guy in the world. He was so cool. Everybody was so cool and fun.
I didn't know a week. That's remarkable.
Yeah. It definitely gave me a respect for how...
Yeah.
It's probably how people would feel if they came out on tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they'd be like, oh, most of this is just, you're just kind of waiting around.
I'd say too, maybe in the studio.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're just sitting there and somebody's doing, you know, the guitar take for the third time on a song or whatever. And, you know, you're just kind of sitting at the back of the studio while they get it done.
Or they're like swapping out the XLR cable.
Yeah. Hit it again. One more time for me. Hey, let's try the other. And then it's... Yeah, it sounds good.
And you, as the artist, feel like you know the least in the room.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are they swapping it out or am I being punked right now? Ashton?
It's so true.
All right, that's our last question. Those were great questions.
Anyway, guys, we love when y'all do this. Keep sending them.
Keep it.
Keep questioning. But just in that way. Well, maybe in other ways that are healthy. Love you. Bye. Dadville.